Welcome home, friends. I'm Tanya Long, and this is Reset, where purpose meets possibility. We're broadcasting from KPCRLP 92.9 FM in Los Gatos and KMRTLP 101.9 FM in Santa Cruz. Each week, we share conversations with thought leaders and innovators, dreamers and doers who are reshaping the future of work, technology, longevity, and purpose. Whether you're navigating AI's impact, reimagining your career, or searching for deeper meaning, you're in the right place. So settle in, open your mind, and let's explore what happens when purpose meets possibility. Hello and welcome to KPCRLP 92.9 FM. This is Tanya Long with Reset with Tanya. We are here in the studio today with someone I just met a couple of months ago, but she's fascinating. It's Anna Kresner, and I'm practicing my Russian because Anna moved here when she was a teenager, and she still looks like a teenager, but that's good living on her part. So Anna has moved here from Austin just a couple of months ago. And Anna has, the more I get to know Anna, the more transitions I recognize that she has had in life. She grew up in Russia, moved here when she was a teenager. Then from there, she, of course, went to college, got married, and then lived in Austin for 16 or 17 years and just moved back to the Bay Area a few months ago. So she moved back with a family, which is also a transition point in life. Anna was a member of the management team at Amazon AWS, so she was in a huge enterprise, built her family while she was doing that, and now has stepped into senior leadership and entrepreneurial roles. So Anna's just got all kinds of resets in her life, and we are so excited to have her here today on Reset. Anna, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Tanya.
I don't think that we've got a good mic on you. Let's try it again for me.
Hi, Tanya.
Can you that's hear me? Beautiful. That was completely my fault. So welcome. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you so much, Tanya. Thank you for having me.
So tell me a little about what you are looking toward here in now that you've moved back to the Bay Area. It's not your first time living here, but you're just settling in, if it's been 2, maybe 3 months. What does that look like for you? What are you working on right now?
Yeah, there's a ton we're working on. We've been here 3 months now, you're exactly right. But to be honest, it feels like home already. It is just absolutely amazing how the community has seemed to embrace us, yourself included, Tanya, thank you. We're working on building multiple businesses right now. You know, I'm watching my kiddos just absolutely thrive here, and it is just such a pleasure.
You have hit the scene pretty hard, and it doesn't feel contrived. It doesn't feel forced. You and your husband have really, as a team, been out meeting people and doing the work of networking. I wonder, you know, if that's because you are accustomed to change. I'm segueing back to in the beginning. I've got friends who are thinking about moving, just in general. Mm-hmm. Friends all across the U.S. Mm-hmm. They're thinking about moving, and there's this thing right at their point in life where they have teenagers, and the moving is about when the kids are off to school, mm-hmm. meaning off to university. Mm-hmm. And I think about you being 14. And moving, not just across town, but from a whole other country. Mm-hmm. So, what was that like for you to move from a small town in Russia mm-hmm. to where we are now? And what impact did that have on your values as an adult?
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to talk about that. And maybe I'll actually go back a little bit more in time and just give you a little bit more insight on, you know, where I come from.
I'm going to learn some things here. I can't wait. Tell us.
Absolutely. So was born and raised in a small academia town in Russia. It was actually what they called a closed city. So, and the reason that was is because it was off the map completely until the early 2000s for scientific, military, and political reasons.
Okay, I grew up near Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And for people who don't, and so I'm making that like comparison because Oak Ridge was, it was not off the map because, you know, living in the U.S. is different than living in Russia from from an openness standpoint. Mm-hmm. But brilliant people in Oak Ridge, but it was not over-marketed for all that Oak Ridge brought to the nuclear weapons and nuclear research industry. So anyway, you grew up in a closed town that wasn't even on the map until 2000.
Yep. Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head. So my dad was at the time a nuclear sciences engineer.
Yep.
And so we had the opportunity in 2000 to move to the United States, and I watched my parents take that opportunity.
Yep.
When I think about Russian culture in general, incredibly gritty and resilient culture, I think that is probably one of my points of strength as well. But then, you know, when I think about my parents making that decision in leaving a very successful life behind, but for something that was going to be so much better for all of us, and probably driven by the desire to provide their children with better opportunities down the line while making a sacrifice in the short term for themselves, has been just an incredible leadership example for me in my life.
I love that. But 14 is a fragile age. Sure. That's why my friends won't even move across town until their kids, because they wouldn't want their kids to even change schools because of the disruption that would create. Mm-hmm. So what was it like for you, leaving behind your friends? Mm-hmm. This wasn't pre-internet, but it was pre us all being so socially connected via online models. So you really left that life behind at an age that's precarious and started fresh here. Mm-hmm. What was the magic for you in starting fresh?
At that moment, we as children are so incredibly flexible and resilient. At that time, I don't remember being scared in the process of moving, And making friends here, of course, was hard. But I think life in general, when I look back towards my childhood, it really prepared me for that. Happy to even tell you a story on that front. So, in our town, when I was 6 years old, I tested into the best school, the best, academic school at the time that focused on four languages and math. And I remember first through fourth grade, I must have gotten the strictest teacher that there was at the time.
Right.
His parents were scared of her. Kids were scared of her. I'm pretty sure, the principal of the school was scared of her. And, she wasn't abusive or anything like that, but she certainly made a point of making sure that everybody in class knew she was going to call on them. And if they didn't know the answer, she would publicly shame you. So I think we all got the point really, really quickly that, you better know your stuff. And so I think that really shaped me.
That was good and training.
And, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But, interestingly enough, I think at the time, I wasn't a standout student. It's pretty average, I'd say, when I compared myself to my peers, B's and C's at the time. But then I remember transitioning into like fifth grade and beyond. All of a sudden, I started getting A's and I felt confident. I had all these friends and it was like, ooh, I like this. I liked the competitiveness.
The achievement.
I liked achievement. I liked winning. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that really, I'm 40 years old today almost. I'll be 40 this year. And it's interesting that I still think back to, my elementary teacher helping to mold me into what I am today.
I those experiences stay with us. One of my colleagues here at the radio station teaches drama to like the junior high age, and I remember I could come through here with my own stories about what made me me back in Sue Cherry's, for all those people in Tennessee listening, for back in Sue Cherry's first grade class, they start to form how we feel about ourselves, right? So when you moved over here, equally, you know, tough age, and I don't think it was as tough 20 years ago as it is today in terms of, you know, we hear a lot about kids bullying each other, and, you know, the school's tough. It's tough to stand out. So when you moved over here, did you stand out? Were you, because you moved, Russian was your first language.
Yes.
I imagine you were in a fairly competitive area in terms of your classmates.
Yeah, you know, I think what really helped me through the transition, because I felt like I stood out, and I think at that age all you want to do is fit in with your peers, and you know, the fact that you have an accent is super uncomfortable. So I think, you know, I worked really, really hard to get rid of mine. You know, you'll probably pick up on some points where you can still hear it, but for the most part people don't. But I remember, you know, jumping into sports right away is something that really helped me fit in. You know, bonding with my peers, with my teammates at the time, and again, working on something hard together, right? And you're all working towards a goal, and, you know, you're all failing, and then you're all winning, and, you know, you're celebrating each other. And that really helped me through that transition, I would say. You know, so that helped me find my community there at the time. Get my footing.
I love it. At some point you went to college, and I don't remember where you went to school, but you landed really as an adult in Boston, because Austin, not Boston. Whoops.
Yeah.
And Austin's a great town. You built a family there.
Yes.
And then you moved from Austin back to the Bay Area, as we've described the last 3 months. What was it like having to make such a large transition, establishing your own family? Your kids aren't 14. Your kids are on the younger side. But still, they're still at an age where they have a social network. And so you picked up four people and moved from Austin back to the Bay Area a few months ago. What have you learned from that process and from being responsible for children, frankly, through that process? What are you learning about that with the transition?
You know, Tanya, it's interesting because I don't know if it's all that much different. I've moved multiple times in my life. So, you know, I remember how scary it felt even moving from California to Austin 17 years ago. You know, of course, at the time it was just myself and my partner. You know, we weren't even married yet. But what drew us is the opportunity that we saw moving to Texas. And that was way before everybody decided that they wanted to move to Austin. You know, but we were like, wow, here's an opportunity where, you know, we can buy a home and maybe raise a family here sometime down the line. And Austin, you know, has been absolutely incredible to us. But then, of course, you know, when I think about today and having a family with young children, you really have to prioritize everybody's needs, and really what made us make that decision is it just made sense across the board for the entire family. You know, it made sense for the kids, you know, an opportunity to grow up in California, different climate, different schools, you know, all this opportunity. And for ourselves, you know, equally, right? So we moved for family reasons that really pulled us towards here with, you know, we unfortunately lost my mother-in-law end of last year. And one of the bigger reasons was to move here to support my father-in-law, again, through this transition and really be here for him. But, you know, when we thought about the opportunity to be in the Silicon Valley at this point in time, when so much about technology is changing, you know, we said, you know what, let's just do it. It just makes sense.
Let's take a little detour on what you just said. I lived in Tennessee, and I first started coming to the Bay Area in 99, 2000 with my early tech jobs. So I lived in Tennessee and I was out here once a month. And I felt in, we'll say 2000, that this place was on fire, that this was, you know, that this was everything, that, and so much of what was happening in the world, I knew it was centered here. Mm-hmm. And the pace felt so inspiring, scary, fun. And I thought in 2000 everything was happening here. Mm-hmm. And now I'm here, and you were here then. You would have been here in 2000 in the Bay Area, or close to the year 2000. Mm-hmm. Then you left, mm-hmm. and we're in Austin for 17 mm-hmm. years. And now you're back saying, everything is here.
Yep.
In the meantime, I've been here 12 years, mm-hmm. 13 this fall. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten jaded to how much we see and experience and are able to be involved in here. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. I deeply appreciate living in this zone of innovation, because it creates a creativity that I don't think exists anywhere else. So for you, do you recognize any difference from when you left, mm-hmm. and I thought it was the top of the world way back then, and now, mm-hmm. and the fevered pitch that we're at with AI. Mm-hmm. This is not a talk about AI, but it's more about like being in the middle of all the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, for me, what energizes me is all of this change and all the wonderful conversations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I am in favor of just leaning into that, leaning into the curiosities just to find mm-hmm. out more, even if you feel a little bit of fear. You know, I tend to lean more in and ask, well, why is that? Mm-hmm. And when I think about just the opportunity to soak all of that in and ultimately be able to bring those insights to our customers,
yep.
you know, the people that we serve that live beyond the Silicon Valley, mm-hmm. you know, our mm-hmm. customers are global. So, I mean, it's just a huge opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. I love it. I'm going to pause for just a second and talk about some fun things going on in our community here locally. You just said global, and I'm pulling us back in to local. We are broadcasting live from Los Gatos. And Los Gatos is hosting a wine walk. The Los Gatos Chamber of Commerce will be hosting a wine walk on Saturday, April 26th. And so that's next weekend. And there will be vendors, I think it's more than 30 vendors will be pouring wines from the region. KPCR will also have bands in our courtyard. So we're at 59 Santa Cruz Avenue, North Santa Cruz Avenue, which is the main drag here through Los Gatos. So I would encourage people who are listening, who are local, to think about coming down, grabbing a glass of wine. You have to get a ticket to go through all 30 wines. But yeah, that's actually a bargain if you think about it. But the shops are making this a big deal here in Los Gatos. And the radio station's making a big deal, because you know, we have bands, we'll be doing live broadcasting throughout the day. So I'd like to encourage people that are local to get involved with the community and join us here. So back to community for you, with all these changes, you know, you work globally, mm-hmm. We'll talk about AWS more in a minute or two or 10, but you work globally with what you've done with work and how you've lived. And you've lived very locally, because I see you when you're with me at events and I see you network, and so you're very interested in people. Across that range, what is it that anchors you in who you are? What keeps you grounded in, you know, mm-hmm. big company, small town, you mm-hmm. know, all the range that you work in, mm-hmm. Live in? What keeps you grounded to be you?
Yeah, the main thing that comes to mind is really my values, Tanya. Because mm-hmm. that is probably the one thing that has been consistent my entire life.
Yeah.
So maybe the way that I accomplish those things and the tools that I use in my toolkit might be a little bit different. Mm-hmm. But the values really stay the same. You know, I think about the impact that I want to and am able to drive mm-hmm. on behalf of our customers, our companies that we're building, and really the opportunity to make a difference and continue to learn both as a professional, as an individual, and continue to discover yourself through the journey. That has always remained an interest. So, and will.
I love it. You've had all these, I'll call them geographical cultural journeys that make you fascinating and patient with other people. That's what I see in you. But you've also had work journeys. You were at AWS, and for anyone listening who doesn't know, because not everybody lives in our tech bubble, but AWS is multi, I could keep going, billion-dollar behemoth of a company that has ridden this tech wave inside of Amazon. You were on the management team there. I think you were responsible for like 239% growth in your division.
And then for 100 for sure.
Okay. And then you moved on to something else. So what was your experience? And what you moved on to was, I'm going to say, obviously much smaller than AWS, because nearly everything in the world from a work perspective is going to be smaller than AWS. But what was that like for you to move from something so ubiquitous with global and tech into something smaller?
Yeah, you know, I absolutely loved my time at AWS. You know, it is very widely known as a very fast, innovative, competitive culture.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and the opportunity that I had to work with just incredibly brilliant people, all working towards just this massive vision, changing lives for customers and just people out there in the world. I loved my time there. It was incredibly difficult. I learned a ton. And we worked really, really hard, Tanya. We worked really hard. You know, I remember how much I also wanted to shine within that environment. And this is an environment where, you know, AWS only hires A players. And it's hard to keep that up, right? But I remember my first 2 years, you know, I got top tier 2 years in a row. First year in, you know, I approached my manager at the time and I said, you know, what does a promotion look like around here? And at the time, you know, she said, well, you know, I'm really supportive and the leader of our organization wants you to serve 2.5 years in a row before that's even considered. And I went, well, screw that, I'll do it in two, you know, and and I worked really hard. I worked nights and weekends, and I did it. You know, I more than doubled my pay in 3 years. And people knew me. I was so proud of that within the organization. And then if that
wasn't enough, of the big company environment.
Yes, it is. And if that wasn't enough, I threw myself into sort of a career change to drive digital transformation with customers out in the field. And that was a really interesting journey of its own. And I remember one morning, you know, I'm getting ready to go to a customer on site and we're ready to kick off an 8-digit transformation project. And we've got teams flying in from other states to help lead this. And I sign on to my computer and I'm almost dressed. And I get this email that says, your role has been eliminated.
Oh my God, that's how your notification occurred?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I hope we've learned a lot since then. Okay. I'm so sorry.
No, and it's okay, you know, and I sat there, you know, in that moment. And I was like, wait a minute, what? And I watched my computer start to go dark. And I had tears running down my face.
Oh, of course.
And when I think about how I felt in that moment, you know, I felt
crushed,
betrayed.
I felt betrayed.
I felt like I had lost all those years worth of work.
It's your identity when you go through that cycle.
Yeah.
For most of us.
It felt like I lost. But then I paused and, you know, my head was racing with all these thoughts of, well, how do I make sure that never happens again?
Of course, of course.
Right? But then I was like, well, wait a minute. what does it mean to be a winner? And here's the funny part. I went to ChatGPT because I was like, well, what's the definition of a winner?
So this was more recent than I thought it was.
Fairly recent.
Oh,
fairly
then that's recent. Embarrassing.
It's
shame
a couple
on
years.
You.
No, no, a couple years.
You, AWS. No. Like Jeff, do better.
No. Like I said, I loved my time with the organization.
I know.
But I went to ChatGPT and it gave me the definition of a winner. And the definition was, a winner is someone who achieves their goals through perseverance, resilience, and a clear sense of purpose.
Oh, yes.
And it didn't say anything about not failing. Good it didn't job, say Chat anything GPT. About not, right. not failing.
Yeah, of course.
A winner is somebody who fails, they get back up, collect themselves, and they do it over and over and over again until they win.
Yeah.
Until they win. But my biggest takeaway from all of that was that latter part. The part about the clear sense of purpose.
Yeah.
Because I had realized that while I was chasing all the accolades and the titles and all the things, I forgot about my sense of purpose.
Oh, entirely. You're not alone. Keep going. I'm like, yes, and? Yes, yes. And?
And yeah. I think looking back, what this opportunity really gave me is a chance to reflect, to hop off the hamster wheel and say, well, who am I and what do I want to do? What do I really want to do? What do I want to accomplish? How do I want to feel? You know, and I found my sense of purpose again with clarity. And I said, you know, I want to lead, I want to build, I want to learn, I want to love, I want to touch the hearts of others.
You want too much.
I know.
I'm kidding. I'm just kidding. So,
and this, again, this was a time where I put myself last. So it just felt so incredibly good to discover that again. You know, again, in a big conglomerate, like you said, where you're serving your leaders, you're serving your customers, you've got a family at home with children whose needs you put before your own.
Absolutely. All the way around, we are living for other people there and their roadmap in life, right?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So I'm glad ChatGPT helped you through that crisis.
Oh, it sure did. ChatGPT is my friend.
I'm being a little snarky saying that, but you know, we all have things that we turn to to help give us grounding, right? And what occurs to me about your shift, and I'm still kind of reeling over how that happened to you, and I am deeply sorry because we owe our organization. I know you're whole and full and moving forward beautifully in your life. And just as a small detour, I was responsible for those decisions that affected thousands of people in my career. And I can say about you, because I know enough about you, nearly every single person that I was leading organizational decisions to make those tough decisions, nearly every single person went on to do more and better.
Absolutely.
I mean, even the ones who were closer to, you know, quote, retirement age, who were already looking at that, pivoted into what they were going to do in that very different next chapter of their lives. People who were still, you know, churning on that hamster wheel you mentioned, they almost all, I mean, 99 and five nines, we'll talk some industry terms, five nines of them did better. They moved into roles that were closer to a lot of people, their purpose. So that's what I will offer, is when things do happen, when these events in life occur, they happen for us, not to us. That's exactly. My deep belief. It's taken a lot to get there, to realize that, to accept that. But I see you doing better than if you were still on that hamster wheel at AWS.
100%.
I really, really do. One of the things about moving from a really big company to a, you know, and this is not, you can't be bigger than AWS. It's just hard to be bigger than AWS. But to a smaller organization is the obvious opportunity for impact, right? Because when you're fly into Dali in China every month. Mm-hmm. When you're doing things like that, you feel like your impact is on such a big scale. Mm-hmm. And then when you go to work for any entity that's smaller, you feel like, you know, part of your identity is tied to the measurements we put around the impact mm-hmm. that we deliver. So how did your definition of impact change when mm-hmm. you shifted into the clarity of your purpose?
Mm-hmm. So for me, a lot of the focus shifted from some of those, as I call them, accolades and things, to relationships with people. Mm.
Oh, wonderful. Yes.
Because, you know, I recall, you know, at the time, you know, earlier time in my career, you know, I was like, well, let me just take the most efficient, quickest path to where I need to go. And I almost felt like, you know, there were certain things and people who slowed me down. Mm-hmm. But what I learned throughout, you know, all these various transitions and in my career as a whole, it's the relationships at the end of the day that matter. You know, and through those darker days, mm-hmm. you know, when I was going through the transition of separating from mm-hmm. AWS when the door had closed, it was the people who got me through that.
Yeah.
You
of
know,
course.
It was the leaders, it mm-hmm. was the peers, it was my friends, and, you know, some of those, of course, I had to work to rebuild, frankly, because as I thrust myself completely into the world of, you know, corporate life, mm-hmm. you know, there were friendships that, you know, slipped, and again, I had to work really, really hard to get them back. You know, and sometimes that's normal, right? Like we grow and some people come and go out of our lives. But, you know, to me, that is what I think about today in building companies and culture is kind of a people first mentality. Because at the end of the day, these great companies and tools that we're building are for the people.
Mm-hmm.
They're
mm-hmm.
for the people. They're to make our lives better is the way I view it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm around a lot of people that are either have transitioned out of big companies or see that on the, or they are still in enterprise mm-hmm. and they are considering that the move will occur soon.
Mm-hmm.
And defining success for them is a pretty big journey. And you have to unlearn some things, I think, mm-hmm. about how things operate. Were there things that you had to unlearn in making your transition?
I think so. When I think about that, two things come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be willing to roll up your sleeves and do the dirty work.
I'm smirking at you. Okay, how's that a shift?
You have to get down to the details. So if you've been mm-hmm. operating at this high level, right? Okay. So and you're transitioning into, you know, let's say a startup environment, you can't expect things to just happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to dive into the details and do the work yourselves and be willing to coach and do all of that.
Okay.
The other thing that comes to mind is, you know, the political environment
yes.
of big corporate. It's one big thing I don't miss.
mm-hmm.
And sometimes in big corporate, you'll see people tend to hoard resources.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes. whether that is to create a moat mm-hmm. or, mm-hmm. you know, something along those lines. And I really feel like there's an opportunity to achieve so much more if you share more.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a small pie that I want. I want a piece of a bigger pie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can create so much more impact out mm-hmm. in the world if we help each other.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I'm going to come back to a point on networking, but first I'm going to do a quick station ID. You are listening here to KPCR LP 92.9 out of not as sunny Los Gatos. I usually give a weather report. And we also broadcast on sister station KMRT LP 101.9 out of Santa Cruz. And we're happy to have you here, even if it's a little overcast today. So coming back to Anna, dare I try to say it? I'm working on my, if you weren't here at the beginning of the show, Krishna. I'm working on my Russian.
You did it. It
sounds more like I'm trying to clear something out of my throat. I'll get it. I will get it eventually. But we talked about networking, and that is one of the things that I consistently advise people on who are making their transition, or younger career people. When you're in those big organizations, it is so easy to be in that pattern you and I were both in. Heads down, all about AWS, all about my division, what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And people fail to network in their 20s and 30s mm-hmm. that are in those big companies because they are so heads down, committed to the company and the job. And then what I find is they get to that mid-30s mark and they start to make these transitions like you and I've made. And they don't have a network to fall back on because everybody's still busy at AWS, mm-hmm. right? And so I encourage people, especially women, it seems like, have a harder time because they're starting to raise families and they're really trying to achieve and climb, and they don't prioritize mm-hmm. the value of meeting and knowing and being seen by other high-functioning people to help them raise the bar. And to be there when they're not where they are now. So did you do that? Like I'm guilty. I'm totally guilty. It's in hindsight that I have that wisdom. Were you the same? And if so, what was it like to ramp up your networking chops mm-hmm. to be out there in the market of you, in the market of helping people have an opportunity to see Anna and all that Anna is capable of doing?
Yeah, Tanya, thank you for that question. I think sometimes we go through transitionary periods where, you know, they make us see things very differently.
Mm-hmm. It's called experience.
Yeah. and yes, it was definitely when I transitioned more into the entrepreneurial space that I had become intentional about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, you see layoffs happen left and right these days too. And, you know, I just think about how important it was for me at the time to feel that support from some of my AWS colleagues who did offer the hand.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And for me, you know, I would love, absolutely love to extend that same gesture to anybody in my network who needs that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and beyond that, you know, for my entrepreneurial journey, you know, what we think about a lot within our company is creating partnerships where together 1 + 1 = 3 or = 5.
Mm-hmm.
So we are always out there looking for partners, looking for fresh ideas. And I'm an extrovert. You know, what drives me is the people. It's the energy of those around me. And I find that when I surround myself with people who are as growth-minded as I am, you know, and maybe
it fuels you. Yeah.
Beyond the point mm-hmm. where I am, you know, I feel much more energy and motivation and hopefully, you know, that goes back and forth so that we create this multiplier effect, really.
Mm-hmm. And that multiplier effect, I was going to say it's harder to obtain in big enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
And you get it because you get the synergy of teams and you get the geography impact and all those things, but it's different. The multiplier effect, I took a call this morning from somebody who's doing his first fractional assignment,
mm-hmm.
and it was a 7:30 LinkedIn text. Oh my God, how do I price this, right? And I'm so thrilled for him because he came out of, you know, one of the really big companies here on the peninsula, I'm gonna say 6 or 7 months ago. And
mm-hmm.
he's been doing some angel investing and he's been hitting up all the the network's not really eager to jump back in.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's found a very interesting cybersecurity company to be involved with.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt so honored that he reached out to me at 7:30 in the morning saying, how does this work? What do I do?
Yeah.
You know, and do you have, you know, are there contracts that I, do I need a lawyer? No, you need ChatGPT. That's what I said. I said, and if you have anything in ChatGPT that you don't understand, then you call me back.
Mm-hmm.
But that multiplier effect is we are all relying on each other
mm-hmm.
to get done what we need to get done to move things through.
Mm-hmm.
To satisfy our lives, mm-hmm. to make us better people,
mm-hmm.
and that network is so valuable. By the same token, when other people that don't know me just reach out to me on LinkedIn because of my presence there, and they say, "Please introduce me to investors," and I'm like, "It doesn't work that way," you know. That I mean, because that is such an important network to me, and they're so valued by me.
Mm-hmm.
I would never just like do a pass through of, oh, Sam Smith reached out to me on LinkedIn,
mm-hmm.
and so meet Sam Smith. No, because I'm vouching for the people that I introduce.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also interesting to be in the position to coach people when you turn down their requests,
mm-hmm.
because these networks are valuable to us. You have to. I told this man had recently moved here from out of the country,
mm-hmm.
and I said, you know, get involved with local groups so that you are meeting these people.
Absolutely.
And then make a connection. But you have to do the work.
And give before you make the ask.
Well, yeah, there's that. But I could only slap him around too much. Just so much.
Yeah.
But it is a privilege for both of us, I think, mm-hmm. to be in the Bay Area. This networking opportunity is so huge,
mm-hmm.
and I get to meet a lot of people who are just here for a few weeks, and I tell them, take what you've learned about interaction, about community, and wherever you're going back to, host an event, host a dinner, host a you know, tap night, you know, beer, Hoppus, mm-hmm. down the street that you and mm-hmm. I have both been to. To get people together, to create that community where you are. So I think being with people is the transition point. You know, I think you've always been focused on community, but when your work focus isn't drawing you into such a narrow path, it's much easier to broaden out like you've done in the last few years. So let's talk about, I'm segueing, I'm trying to sing into the music here, but along this journey in Austin, you had two beautiful children.
I did.
You did. Still have two beautiful
yeah.
children. How has that affected you also being a breadwinner and a boss mama? And I just made that word up. Is that even, that ought to be a website.
I'll take it.
Boss mama. How has that affected your transitioning and how you show up as a leader and a person who genuinely loves doing the art of business? So has having kids at home impacted how you do that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I think it's taught me patience.
Yeah.
It's taught me empathy.
Yeah.
It's made me slow down and appreciate little moments more and pay attention to the talent of individuals and how do you multiply that and take that to the next level.
I love that. Yeah. Not everybody runs at the same speed.
No.
Not everybody thinks at the same speed. And I think you would be more sensitive to that,
mm-hmm.
and you've got two children pretty close in age,
mm-hmm. 10 and 6.
Yeah,
but they have given me so much more, Tanya. I think they've taught me so much about me.
Oh,
sometimes children are like little mirrors,
good and bad.
Oh, yeah,
but mirrors are good, they serve a purpose,
yes,
right?
Yes,
yeah.
I recall a time when, and this little story is on my LinkedIn somewhere, is maybe about a year or 6 months ago.
All right.
We were driving in the car and we were talking about superpowers, and my kids were fighting in the back seat about who was better at math.
And
then I turned around and I said, "Hey, what's my superpower?" And they said, "Super love." Like, without hesitation, my son said, "Super love." And it just stuck with me the entire day.
That's how they see you.
But as I went about my work, about my day, I was like, yeah, that is. That is exactly.
And I'm leaning into that. I didn't know it, but I am leaning in.
Exactly.
And I'm going to.
Yeah.
But what a beautiful moment.
Exactly.
And wholly authentic, mm-hmm. right? For them to reflect that back to you.
Yeah.
I love
it. Absolutely grateful for it.
I love it. I've really been blessed with a lot of, when I was in enterprise mm-hmm. corporations, I've been blessed with more than I think the normal share of strong, powerful women who were mothers. Mm-hmm. And I looked at them and I did not know how they did it. You know, because raising kids it's physical and time, mm-hmm. it's time consuming work. Mm-hmm. So how they could do all they could do, and then, you know, sneak out at 3:30 to hit a soccer game, and mm-hmm. then be right back online later to finish things up for a board meeting. I was just so impressed with all of them. Did you have to, or did you find yourself deploying strategies to be able to manage both of those elements of your life? Because they both are high demand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there were definitely times where I was terrible at that.
As I
mentioned,
go easy on yourself.
There were, you know, nights and weekends and all the things. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when I think about what worked for me is prioritization and setting boundaries.
Oh, and tell me more.
Well,
I'm terrible at boundaries. Anybody who knows me knows I'm terrible at boundaries.
I'm probably not as good at it as I should be either. But, you know, communicating some of that, you know, to your teams, mm-hmm. to your leadership, but then also having some of those conversations with your kids at the end of the day, you know, is it really important to you that I'm here for this particular event? And if they say yes, then damn it, I'm going to be there. I'm going to find mm-hmm. some way to be there. Mm-hmm. And I think that some people maybe feel that if you embrace that and you give the individual the opportunity to take those moments for themselves, somehow the performance bar is lower. No. Who says it's got to be lower? The performance bar is still here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But embracing that individual with their whole self, their life, because, you know, like, things happen every day. Mm-hmm. Things happen, health and family and all the things, and they happen, and I think unless you allow that individual to live their life and bring their whole self to work, you will never get their best.
That's right.
At work.
That's right.
Never. You know, and I don't need a computer. If I wanted a computer, here we go. We've got all these mm-hmm. ML models these days.
That's right. That's
right. You know,
right.
So I think that's the beauty of, you know, a diverse work mm-hmm. environment is, mm-hmm. you know, you allow the individual to be themselves and bring their best to work. Mm-hmm. And that's how you also, frankly, get full buy-in and full contribution. And and at the end of the day, what you get back is so much more, including the relationship, including the impact, including the innovation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree with everything you said. I'm going to add an angle to it because you've been focused on the impact at work with what you've been talking about. But I think, and I'm not trying to preach, and I'm not trying to influence anyone to be anything they're not. Mm-hmm. But I think what you bring home to the family when you work is also richer. Very early in my career, the chief HR officer at the company and I were buds. And she went out to have her baby and then came back to work. And she said, "I'm a better mother when mm-hmm. I'm working because I want to be with my kids more. I'm excited when I get home because I get to see them." And her kids were still very, very, very young. But she was anticipating what she brought to them, and the example that she set was for her and for her family dynamic something that she looked forward to for her kids, seeing balancing priorities, mm-hmm. the family is not the only thing in your life, you know, that mommy has other things that are important to her, and we're going to both honor each other's needs. So I think you bring a lot to your family when you're able to balance that effort.
100%. Yeah. And I think that goes both ways for my son and my daughter.
Yeah.
You know, I want my daughter to look at me as an example.
Yes.
But I also want my son to look at me and understand what it's like to be a woman. And, you know, as he thinks about, you know, the women in his life, and I don't want to think about that because he's still my baby, but, you know, one day he's going
to... But you're raising an adult. You're not trying to just keep him at 6 years old for forever.
Mm-hmm.
Is he six?
He's 10.
He's 10. Thank you. When you called him your baby, but he is
still
your baby.
My he's forever still your... my baby. I tell him that every day.
he's still your baby, and he will be when he's 40. Yes. But but I think anticipating, you know, the role model that you are for them, and for them seeing you struggle, frankly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, and here I am putting too much of my own opinion on the air, but I think when we raise our children in a fragile way, and they think that everything is supposed to be perfect because we have such a sanitized... Mm-hmm. Do you remember The Truman Show, that movie that Jim Carrey did 25 years ago?
No.
It was about like this perfect community, almost Stepford Wives-like. Mm-hmm. It was this perfect community, but it wasn't real. It was being filmed. It was this microcosm of society. The reason I paid so much attention to it, when I lived in Tennessee, one of my favorite little beach towns was Seaside. Mm-hmm. All these little painted cottages, all the same. The Truman Show was shot at Seaside because it is this picturesque, made-for-postcards kind of little town. But The Truman Show was on air for the rest of the world. The people who lived there didn't know it. So it was this fake, and everything was beautiful, and everyone had huge meals for dinner every night that mom had cooked. Yeah, this was 20 years ago, so it was very much tempered toward traditional gender dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
Good, I spit that out. But it was fascinating to see, to think about things that aren't real, and we have to show our kids what's real. And a lot of my friends, and I love them, so you know I'm talking to you. you out there listening, but they just want things to be so good for their families. They don't want their families to see struggle. But I think kids, to your very initial point, are much more resilient than we maybe sometimes give them credit for, and much more flexible.
Mm-hmm.
And they're willing to see the adventure in things. So I'm sure that like this move wasn't trauma for your family. It was, what do we get to do next?
Yes. And I've already seen them grow so much from that. It's only been 3 months.
3 months. I mean, I've got this look of shock on my face for those that are listening. 3 months, and you already see it.
Yes. Yes. More confidence. Yeah. All the things.
So how do you characterize the wisdom from motherhood that has made you better in your professional life?
Oh my gosh, I don't even know how to characterize it.
Something you said earlier makes me recognize, you know, you said you were more patient, and you said you were able to look at people, and in my words, people with different skill sets or different capacities, and think in a different way, more heart-centered way.
More heart-centered,
about absolutely. How to focus their gifts and talents, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe that was your answer for how has the wisdom, has the experience of motherhood taught you to see working with people differently?
Yes, it's a lot of that. Definitely recognizing people for who they are, but then also giving myself grace sometimes. You know, we often put so much pressure on ourselves, so much pressure.
I wouldn't know anything about that. but you are chill. You are you're not a high strung individual. That's not your nature.
Sometimes.
I think you have quiet, high expectations of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And
of those around me.
And of those. I'm glad you said that.
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely 100%.
Mm-hmm.
and living into that with all the pressures that you have, mm-hmm. And then setting expectations in a new model, because this is a new paradigm for you, and it's a new paradigm for a lot of us, mm-hmm. where there are clear boundaries and expectations in enterprise. Mm-hmm. There's that hierarchy. There's the, mm-hmm. Revenue of divisions make one more important than the other. Those kinds of things are mm-hmm. models for how we measure our response to requests. Mm-hmm. So I think it would be interesting, how do you, now that you've shifted to entrepreneurship, mm-hmm. how do you measure how you respond to requests? Because there's a lot of hungry birds that are reaching for us. Mm-hmm. So how do you prioritize? And I want to tie it back to motherhood. How has being a mother taught you to prioritize in your professional life differently?
Yeah, so I think part of it is understanding your ultimate calling.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Take it back to purpose.
Well, yes, and then also your strengths.
Yeah.
And then thinking about being resourceful. Where do I as an individual add value? Where are those areas that are not my strength? Or maybe I just frankly don't want to go there. Mm-hmm. And how do I partner with somebody who does shine that area, and that is exactly what they want and need. Mm-hmm. So that is ultimately, that I think that has served me well both in my career and in motherhood. I definitely tried to do it all in the early days when my son was very, very young. Mm-hmm. I put so much pressure on myself. And this whole time I had this amazing partner sitting next to me. All I had to do was ask for some help.
Now let's not say Igor's amazing. He's probably listening.
Maybe. Yeah, probably is. Yeah. So, but seriously, like this goes for both the professional mm-hmm. life and for personal life. You don't have to do this alone.
Oh, bingo. Bingo. And your partners aren't just the ones that you're in relationship with and live under a single mm-hmm. roof with, right? Your mm-hmm. partners in all of this are so broad and diverse. But I think it's making the ask that is the hard thing for people like us. We don't
think so too.
We don't reach out enough. I'm not going to go too far, but I was always the boss. I was always doing for other people. I was always helping other people. Being helped mm-hmm. is hard. It's I struggle with personally. Because I've got all the answers, right? And so coming into these broader communities where we are a matrix of people helping each other, like the call I took this morning at 7:30 about pricing on fractional work, it's a shift to be helped, mm-hmm. right?
It's a gift.
All right, now you're preaching. So two words, a gift, and it's preaching. I love it. So you've got so much experience and so much wisdom from it. For people who are listening who see this in their trajectory, who see either a physical move from Austin to the Bay Area, as mm-hmm. an example, or the career shift move, because it is a big shift from big enterprise to an entrepreneurial thing. What's your advice for people who are anticipating and wanting to think more about that journey?
Mm-hmm. I think, first of all, give yourself grace, slow down, take the time to think deeply about your purpose, where you're going, why you're going there, mm-hmm. what it should feel like, what you want it to feel like, not the should, actually, let me take that back, okay. What you want it to feel like. Mm-hmm. Set the shoulds aside. Mm-hmm. And when you find that big thing and you feel the pull towards it, just lean in, find the courage. You don't have to know the how. You'll figure it out along the way. You don't have to have a plan. And by the way, you're allowed to change your mind in the process.
Bingo. You, I'm going to be a little more harsh. You're allowed to change your mind, but whatever you're doing will change. I mean, we especially, I mean, I think it's always been the adage that, you know, that change is the only constant. But I, what my forecast for the future in the world of work is that we're going to be under constant revision. And we, and each of us has to work on resilience and adaptability. Not in a bad way, but in a, what do I get to do? What is coming for me next?
Yes.
And it's, and then it all, and it all, it's these don't have to be radical pivots. I think when you get accustomed to living a life of reinvention, which is what reset is all about, then those changes aren't quite so scary because you have a direction that you're already working toward that you are interested in, that's at your core. And I think that's the opportunity for people.
100%.
Yeah.
So couldn't agree more.
Thank you. This has been so enjoyable. We could go on another hour, and the station manager might let us, but I'm not going to do that. So thank you. If people would like to get in touch with you or want to follow you as you know, you make your journey here in the Bay Area and in different segments of your career, how would you like for them to try to get in touch with you?
Yeah, you're welcome to find me on LinkedIn or Instagram. Anna Krasnych is my name.
Thank you.
And then, yeah, feel free to check out techandweb.com. That is our main agency where we do all kinds of wonderful, wonderful work for our customers.
Tech and Web, of course, that would be highlighted on your LinkedIn profile.
Yes, ma'am.
I am going to spell your last name for people. Anna is clear, but K-R-A-S-N... Oh, I can't see. N-Y-K-H?
Yes,
K-R-A-S-N-Y-K-H. See?
You got it.
I am learning too, so this is wonderful. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's been an honor.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. We are here on KPCRLP 92.9 FM in still overcast Los Gatos, and also broadcasting from sister station KMRT-LP 101.9 FM Santa Cruz. Just as a note for the people who are listening, this is a community station. We are funded by our listeners, and we're doing good work putting on programs like this, getting Anna's voice heard and other people's voices heard, giving creatives and artists a chance to have their work seen and heard, and then community things like the wine walk that's coming up next weekend. These things are all funded by our listeners, and if you feel so compelled, just go to the kpcr.org website, and you'll find several little support buttons scattered around the website for you to become part of the team that helps us get these messages and the talent out to our communities. So thank you again. This has been Tanya Long with Anna Krasnych. I'm getting worse. It's like my RV backing. It gets worse the more I do it. So it has been wonderful to be here. Thank you, everyone. It has been a great day, and we will see you next week.
Thanks for joining us on Reset. You've been listening to our show from KPCRLP 92.9 FM in Los Gatos and KMRTLP 101.9 FM in Santa Cruz. Remember, transformation is a journey, not a destination. So until next time, keep exploring what's possible. I'm Tanya Long, and this is home. This is Reset.